Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores!
Carlson.
Yes, welcome everybody to the second part of this two-part Keeping Carlson episode, the final episode of the regular season, where we are still discussing the various news, notes, lines, stats, goalies, everything that came up on GameToTweets.com over the past few days, as we look forward to the final week of the regular season and, of course, the playoffs, and, of course, next year. We got a lot to talk about, okay? So I'm here, Elon Dubrovsky, with me. It's still Brian Kalm. Brian, how you feeling an hour into this episode? I feel like I could go on for... I could keep scrolling through all... We've got... So Game Day Tweets is paginated.
Yeah,
there's like 10 tweets a page. I could do like 400 pages here, no problem.
Is there a reason why you don't have like endless scrolling on Game Day Tweets?
Look, Brian, this is like a side project of mine. Okay,
no, like, I was wondering if it was like an ideological, if it's philosophical choice, or if it's just like
it's just more work.
I haven't done it.
Yeah, I have to then like do like JavaScript. I have to like make these like as AJAX requests and like get the UI to not like, you know, scroll to the right place after it reloads.
I'm asleep already. I just was wondering.
Just like I used a gem out of the box that works really well, and it was easy. That's why I'm doing it this way.
Love those gems out of the box. I wonder if we'll talk about any more gems out of the box on the rest of this episode, which I'm very excited to get to.
Well, one guy who hasn't been a gem based on his draft position, it's actually been the exact opposite. A piece of coal, I don't know, a piece of poop as far as like the value you got, because you got nothing from Gabriel Landeskog. And a lot of people were excited to draft this guy, but this tweet from Peter Bow yesterday confirmed Gabriel Landeskog won't play this regular season. Which I feel like is almost good. It'd be almost annoying if like he came back just for like the last few games once you're already like eliminated from your league. We still don't know if he's going to be back for the playoffs for Colorado. Obviously, that would be huge for them if he could pull a Kucherov and come back just in time. But yeah, too bad. I guess we'll see. Like, you know, we can't like close the book on Landeskog because he might be back in the playoffs. And that will tell us some things about what we need to know like when considering him next year. But I think... at this point, if ever again, like we, you know, sometimes like you go into the season, there's a player who's injured and you're like, you can get him as a value pick. Like Marchand's done that, like Pastrnak even a couple seasons ago. Landeskog, obviously, he's now on the list of like, if you're injured, I'm not drafting you because who knows?
Yeah. Be careful with Landeskog. It's like he hurt a lot of people through their fantasy seasons. I feel like, you know, we were never given clear information. Like, I'm really curious to learn more. I wonder if we will, about the nature of the injury and the reason that he keeps getting backed up. But I am with you, Elon. I'm staying away until I know a little more about what's gone on with Landeskog this season. But he could be a great value pick next season if enough people are disillusioned and not willing to take that chance on him.
Yeah, of course. Again, we're talking now before the playoffs, right? So he won't be a value pick if he like goes and has an amazing playoffs. And now he'll be overvalued, maybe, because people will be like, oh, look, 20 points in 20 games. And we'll be like, you're as nerds, like, you know, like Brock Faber with the glasses being like, oh, small sample size. Don't read too much into. But anyway, we'll get to that. We'll love some. I like our playoff episodes, Brian. I know it's like always like a big struggle of like how much should we read into what's happening? Because they're still games. Like this is still like data, but it's just like a small amount of data. So it's like that fun little push and pull of how much to read into it. But anyway, the next here, we've got a stats tweet about Connor Hellebuck, who had a shutout in that game. So we talked already about Mike Scheifele. So another player who had a great game in that win over Nashville was Hellebuck, who stopped 28 over this team of Predators who like surprisingly were in the playoff race after like trading away everyone or having everyone injured. But they were in it, but it looks like they're probably out at this point. Hellebuck was his 32nd shutout of his career, fourth of the season. What a year for Connor Hellebuck, who kind of like he won the Vezina, then he had 2 years in a row of his numbers just going down and down, and probably that brought his draft value down a little bit. He was still getting drafted pretty high because he's such like a high volume guy, but yeah, probably a value pick for whoever got him in drafts, because he's maybe the most valuable goalie fan, like him or like UC Saros probably were the two best. Okay, while you talk, I'm gonna look at the Kakupful scoring and see which of those two was the top. I'm sure it was one of them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll be happy to talk about Hellebuck in the season he's had. He is right up there with the two of the best seasons in his career to date, going by Dettel Fenwick's save percentage, where he was up 8.5 save points over what his expected number was. This year, he's up 9. So this is Connor Hellebuck showing us that in 3 of 4 seasons, he has been, like, that's amazing to be 9. Usually, like, anything 10 save points and above expected is like, whoa, like, huge year. So the fact that Hellebuck has been on the doorstep of doing that repeatedly shows us just how freaking great Connor Hellebuck can be when he's on his game, which has been a lot more often than not this season. And he's doing it while being a volume goalie. Like, they're only just like sorting by shot, unblocked shot attempts faced. And Hellebuck is like right up there in terms of like having faced the most, fourth highest total at 5-on-5. And while doing that, he has been incredible stopping them. Only Sorokin, Saros, Shesterkin, and Vasilevsky have seen similar volume and played as well as or better than Hellebuck this year. So, like, that's a really elite company of goalies to be with, and like Hellebuck is in that group for a reason.
Yeah, there, along with this tweet, it was a retweet of an NHL PR tweet of like the most career shutouts for U.S.-born goaltenders. And Hellebuck is like climbing this list. He's going to pass Ben Bishop soon. He'll probably also, like, yeah, he could potentially, the leader is Jonathan Quick with 58 shutouts and Hellebuck is 32. So that'll be tough to catch. But second place is Ryan Miller with 44. So like theoretically, if he can get 4 shutouts a season, he can pass that. So that'll be a fun race, I guess, for some people. Brian, okay, so I looked it up. Is it fun? Is this fun when I ask you to guess things? Do you want to guess?
Let's have fun.
Let's have fun. Okay, so Saros was number one actually right now, but it's still going. Saros was 376.5, a couple points. Hellebuck 373. So those are the top two, and it'll be a battle to see who's going to be the top goalie. Want to try to guess the rest of the top five, top six? Like, want to just try to guess who's like next after Saros and Hellebuck?
Did Allmark didn't play enough.
He's fifth.
But he played so well, so he's got to be okay.
And with 48 games, the top four all have 59 or more games, yeah, and Allmark is fifth, so like Allmark had the best season in terms of points per game. But yeah, so okay, try to guess the two goalies ahead of Allmark and behind Saros and Hellebuck.
Sorokin?
Yeah, Sorokin's third.
I don't think Shesterkin.
No, Shesterkin had that
and,
cold stretch.
And I don't think Vasilevsky either.
No, so Vasilevsky's right under Allmark.
Yeah.
But who's above him?
I mean, I've definitely said this goalie's name at some point during the episode tonight.
I don't know if you have, actually. It's a goalie that was always a backup until this season, and now he took over as a starter on his team and has played
on a good or bad team.
A very good team. But a team that, well, struggled a bit at times, but clearly a very good team based on what
Georgiev?
They did last. Yeah, Georgiev.
Okay, all right. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, I feel like Colorado is like the Connor McDavid of teams. Like, they're a lot of them do so well, and we just like expect them to after like they won the cup last year in such decisive fashion that we're all just like, yeah, like we're not going to pay attention to Colorado again for an entire calendar year, and we'll see what happens come playoff time. So way to go. Yeah, Georgiev having a great season. Good for him.
Yeah, good signing for Joe Sakic to get him. Like, you know, I would have been like skeptical. Who am I? All right. So next up, Brian, let's do a tweet from David Dwork. Another player who scored his 40th goal of the season was Matthew Tkachuk. And that gave Florida a 3-2 lead. This was like a big game. You know, the Panthers are right in there in this playoff race. We basically have Florida, the Islanders, and Pittsburgh. All have played 80 games, and they're the three teams vying for 2 wildcard spots, and it's 91-91 points for Florida and the Islanders, and Pittsburgh is with 90. So it's a must-win game for the Panthers, and Matthew Tkachuk came up big, as he always does. He's just been like the best acquisition over the summer, right? Like, the Panthers, like, losing Huberdeau and gaining Tkachuk, and like they also lost Uyghur, and I guess the Panthers overall haven't had a great season. Like, they're just barely fighting for the playoffs, so I don't know if I want to laud them too much for everything, but definitely getting Matthew Tkachuk was very good and locking him in long term.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and what Matthew Tkachuk has done this season is all the more impressive because he's gotten to a new team with like an established captain too, and not only has he been a huge impact player without missing a beat, but I think he's like really made himself like the face, like the face of the team. Like Barkov's always been like sort of a quiet guy, and he spent some time injured. Whereas Tkachuk is someone that Florida, I think, has relied on the most night in, night out to bring the game, lead the team, and do his thing. So what a fantastic acquisition in retrospect, of course. But like, we talk so much about the penalty that we put on a player's fantasy value when they're moving teams, and for overcoming that, and like for it being a non-factor, Matthew Tkachuk's season is even more impressive.
Yeah, like he's going to be a first rounder next year in fantasy. Normally, yeah, I'm like,
and there's no reason to doubt that he can do it again. Like, I feel like we've said that enough on the show over the course of the year, but just in case there's any, I'm not doubting him at all. Easy first rounder.
Yeah, and normally when a player has like a career year, like I'm like going to be skeptical that they'll be able to do it again. But he was also so awesome last year in Calgary, and like, yeah, I just have no doubt. So, speaking of Florida, another stats tweet we had here was that Alex Lyon won his sixth straight game with that win yesterday. So that was like a big reason why Panthers are even in this playoff race, is because Alex Lyon came in. I don't know if they would be in this race if Bobrovsky was just playing. Like, Lyon's been so good in this game against Washington yesterday, stopped 22 of 24 for the win. Like, all six of these games have been great. Like, you know, quality starts according to Frozen Pools. Like, man, this guy is a... If the Panthers make the playoffs, he's their start, game one starter, regardless of Bobrovsky's health. And I wonder what happens from there. Like, he's like, I'd imagine UFA after this year, journeyman. Like, maybe he's playing for a lot. He's playing for his career right now, it seems, and doing really well.
Yeah, this is the first chance that Lyon, like the first extended chance that Lyon's ever really had. He's 30 years old. Like, this is age 30 season. So going into next year, we've seen goalies basically get their careers started around this point. But up until now, Lyon played 11 games in his first season playing in the NHL back in 17-18 at age 25. Since then, he had played a combined 13 games. Before playing the 13, he's played all in one season now, and yeah, doing a fantastic job of helping the Panthers contend for the playoffs. Game one starter would be really interesting, like if Bobrovsky's healthy. I'll be interested, because Bobrovsky has been so hot and cold too. Right?
But like I just think, like, okay, if the Panthers make the playoffs, that probably means they won at least one of these next two games, probably both, which means that Alex Lyon will be at like 8 wins in a row or 7 wins in his last 8 games. Like, right. How can you not just ride this guy?
Yeah. Good argument. He would have won. Yeah. I'm just seeing like who he has been the best Panthers goalie, of course, in a lot less volume than Bobrovsky, but at 5-on-5 this year, he has a 920 save percentage versus Bobrovsky's 918, and Spencer Knight's been at 919, although they've all gotten like drastically different protection. Like, Knight was the best protected, then Bobrovsky, and then Lyon. So like, Lyon is making all these incredible stops while the Panthers are basically hanging him out to dry, like they haven't done to either of their other two goalies this season. All the more reason to be impressed with what Lyon has done lately.
Yeah, actually, so I mentioned this last game where he stopped 22 of 24. I should probably mention the game before that against Ottawa, where Lyon stopped 56 of 58 crazy. Against the Sens. 58 shots against, and they won. It's
yeah.
Incredible. 7-2. They're like, Ottawa lost 7-2 in a game where they took 58 shots.
Yeah. Crazy. That's not, and I think at one point, I don't know what the final shots allowed, but they'd given up like 18. They were giving up a goal on every three or four shots against, because that's what their goaltending has been doing this season. That was not a fun, a lot of violence in that game.
Hmm. So yeah. What is the plan for the Sens, do you think, like next year in net? Is it just like Forsberg and like Sogard, or do they just like need to go after some free agent? Go after Alex Lyon.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be Cam Talbot. I think going after Alex Lyon would be a mistake. Like, I think you need to have somebody you can rely on. And yeah, I don't know. Have you looked at the free agent goalie crop coming up?
James Reimer is out there. Is he so? Corpusalo is out there.
I think both of those guys would be mistakes. Like, you need somebody with some kind of track record.
Well, I don't know if those guys are easy to get.
Well, they're not. So that's the challenge. So you hope if you're Ottawa, like, I would hope if I'm Ottawa that Sogard is able to step up and like have a good enough rookie season that he can like the Sens, they just need good enough goaltending, which they didn't get from Talbot. Man, that Talbot trade. Although I've seen like a lot of talk like Talbot, if the Sens had Gustafsson instead of Talbot, then they would have had this many fewer goals. Like, if they had, like, just, you know, transposing the save percentage or the expected saves, whatever. If you took the expected, the goal saved above average, like even using advanced stats and applied it to Ottawa's situation, if they got that from Gustafsson instead of Talbot, they would have been in the playoffs. And at the same time, I think this, I mean, we shared some intel on the show before that, like, Gustafsson wasn't, like, feeling great about being in Ottawa. And I don't know that he ever would have become the player that he's become in Minnesota. And also, like, he's been passed over twice now. Not to doubt him, but I don't know if you remember, Derek Brassard, after being acquired from Mika Zibanejad in the trade with the Rangers, then the Sens later shipped Brassard to Pittsburgh for Filip Gustafsson. Brassard didn't do much there, and now Gustafsson for Talbot. Anyway, a lot of, like, bad returns for Filip Gustafsson, but a lot of upside. And, like, goalies are hard to find. So,
though, actually, Brian, I have checked. There are actually some big names. If the Sens have the cap for the cap to get these guys, like Frederik Andersen, UFA, have a great season when healthy. Tristan Jarry, who's had a bit of a struggle, but I see a big name. Maybe you don't want him. Semyon Varlamov, you know, if they're going to split. Because they do have Forsberg, right? So, like, he's not nothing.
Yeah, or Sogard.
Yeah. Then you've got, well, then we're getting to another tier there. Like I mentioned, James Reimer is out there. Aiden Hill is out there. He kind of has reinvented himself. Korpisalo's had such a great season.
No.
I think I like Korpisalo. I don't know.
Of those like lesser goalies, I'd be open to taking a chance on Korpisalo.
Antti Raanta? Wait, Carolina has both Andersen and Raanta. But they do this every year. They don't care. And now they also have Kochetkov. So they're fine. They only need, like, one other guy anyways.
Yeah.
Anyway, what should we do here? Let's take a break, okay?
Okay.
Oh, no, one more goalie, since we have a goalie team. We're talking about goalies anyways. The Islanders won 4-0, and Sorokin had a great game. Of course, his 30th win and leading sixth shutout. So, Sorokin, next year when we're doing, you know, last year we put Shestjorkin and Vasilevsky in tier one-ish more goalies board. Maybe Sorokin joins them. Maybe Shestjorkin leaves. I don't know. We have to figure this out. But Sorokin is maybe the best goalie in the league. Like, I would still, you know what? I might take Sorokin over Vasilevsky. Like, Vasilevsky just feels like such a rock. But I think Sorokin at this point is also a rock. And Varlamov will be gone.
Right. Not that that really stopped Sorokin this year, right? So I'm actually curious to see who the Isles, like, maybe Varlamov is extended on a short-term cheap deal to back up Sorokin. But yeah, he's been amazing. I mean, all these, like, I've listed goalies in a lot of different ways over the course of the episode. Sorokin has been up there every single way. So a huge season from him, established, basically doing what Shestjorkin did last year, which is like, yes, he's here. He's amazing. He's here to stay. And we'll see, Ilania, when we weigh all the evidence from this past year on our next Schmore Goalies board, if we have Sorokin and Shestjorkin in the same tier, if we create any separation between the two.
Yeah, okay, I'll do another goalie tweet here from Tampa. Brian Elliott got the game. Remember when it was like you want to kind of play Brian Elliott whenever he gets a start for Tampa because he's
on the It's been a long time since
he's
I felt in that way.
6 goals in 3 straight games. So you probably just stay away from Brian
Elliott. And honestly, my thinking is like, has it only been 3 straight games that he's let in 6 goals?
I'll give you his game log of goals against, okay? 6 and 6, then there's a long break, then 6. Then 3, a win over the Habs, though. Okay, then only 1 against, but that was against Chicago. Then when we get against some tougher teams, 5 against Buffalo, 7 against Pittsburgh. He shut out Arizona. So Brian Elliott is good against bad teams, I think is my conclusion here. So,
okay, I mean, that's a pretty reasonable conclusion. Even the worst goalie can shut out the worst team.
Yeah. All right, Brian, so let's take a break. Do you want to share some more couple winners before
you
we do
bet
so?
I do. Ooh. Holy cow. I mean, they deserve their day in the sun.
I don't even know why we're talking about all these other people and not the couple winners the whole time.
We should have just done a whole episode featuring couple winners and how we project them for next season.
Mm. Okay, well, let's hear what you got.
Okay, let's talk about our Tier 4 and Tier 5 champions. In Henrik, Jason's team is our winner. In Anton, the Orebro Pirates, managed by Marcus. In Melker, Jagerbombs, managed by Steven. In Linus, I guess I should say. I don't know how we pronounce Linus Carlson. Also, we've been naming all these divisions, and people are probably like, what? Like, what are these random names? They all have some connection to Erik Karlsson. Join the Cupful and we'll tell you more about it. It's as season 9 approaches. In Linus, Traders won. Curious to know if they executed any trades. And in William, the Dalai Lama, managed by Terry G29, takes home the prize. And then moving over to Tier Force in Södertalje Division, JPB, 22-17, wins the division. I'm trying to find new ways to say he's the champion, but like it's 43 times, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. In Smallland, Felix Owls, a.k.a. Adam K., a.k.a. our Cupful Gazette key contributor. Thanks for all your writing this year on the Cupful 2.
A.k.a. the person who I beat in the finals of my Dynasty League. Like, his team's really good.
Oh, cool flex. In Liangvi, but he won the Cupful, which is even, I think, a greater accomplishment. So I think he might still have the
Well, like I said at the beginning of the show, I actually think winning my Dynasty League is more impressive than winning the Cupful.
Yeah, of course. In Liangvi, Bufflepuff wins it all. That's Chris W. as the manager. And in Yogurt, our last Tier 4 champion is Hitman Hartman, managed by one of my favorite names in our Discord server, right up there with Hitman Hartman, actually, Blake Dude McDude. So congrats to all our Tier 4 and tier 5 champions. We will we'll shout out our top 3 tier champs at the next commercial break, but to our Tier 4 and Tier 5 champions, congratulations. We salute you. You are on to bigger and better things next season. Holy cow, you're on the doorstep of Tier 1.
I think the Tier 4 champions, two of them are going to Tier 1.
Woo!
The two with the higher regular season points. So
bring
you,
it.
You named them last week. So very exciting stuff, Brian. So let's take a break. We'll be back soon. You're listening to Kevin Carlson. All right, we are back, Brian, and let's just keep scrolling through these tweets here. We've got a bunch of line tweets now, so let's just see if there's anything interesting. First of all, the Canucks are really shaking things up here. I guess, whatever, they have nothing to play for, might as well play around. Vitali Kravtsov, remember him? He's been playing on the top line with Pettersson and Connor Garland. Is it bad that, like, Elias Pettersson is awesome and I think he's great and I'm still, like, not that interested? Like, I did the matchup maximizer yesterday and I was, like, very meh on, like, Kravtsov and Garland, even though they're on the top line. Besser's been playing with Miller and DiGiuseppe. I'd probably take DiGiuseppe over Garland and Kravtsov if I wanted to take one of these secondary Canucks. But obviously this is, like, deep in the weeds talk, but interesting to note, like, what they're trying here.
Yeah, and who's out is Dakota Joshua, who we mentioned last week as being like, yeah, playing on the top line, good peripherals, could be useful to you. And then saw a cut in his deployment. And Beauvillier and Kuzmenko, I guess, on the third line with Sheldon Dries. Beauvillier has been doing a whole lot of nothing lately because he's been given no opportunity to do a whole lot more than that. And Kuzmenko, this is just the latest trip down the depth chart, I guess. Like, he was on, like, he had pointed in 7 of 8 games before being bumped to the fourth line and limited to just 10.5 minutes. So I guess it was something he said or did to Rick Tocchet, but no shots from that line against Calgary. And we'll see if he can bounce back up again in these final couple games of the season.
Yeah, so what do you think? Kuzmenko, is that 70 points? 37 goals and 70 points. He's had an incredible... It's funny, like, how much we've talked about him and, like, sort of, like, controversy around him, like, being bumped off the top power play, bumped off the line. At the end of the day, like, just an incredible first season. He would win the Calder running away if he was eligible. He's just too old. So, going into next year, is this a guy, do you think, that will do this again? Or is it just going to be another, like, it's so hard to predict because we don't know where he'll be in the lineup?
He definitely scored more than he should have. Like, this is, it's Kuzmenko's first year in the league, right? So we don't have that baseline of what a reasonable shooting percentage is for him. But I would be willing to bet you a lot of money that he is not going to shoot 23% at even strength again next year. If I was to bet on a number that he would shoot, I would say closer to, like, just going by his expected goal numbers. He scored at about double the rate of his expected goal scoring. So maybe he's an 11 or 12% shooter. This is just at 5-on-5. His on-ice shooting percentage was high too, but I honestly think that's probably because he kept scoring on so many of the shots he took. And his shooting percentage was also crazy on the power play. 35% for Kuzmenko. But there, he was actually, like, really dangerous. He was, he had a lot of shots from great locations. Expected goal rates was almost 2.5 goals per minute, and his actual goals rates on the power play were just over 3. So that's actually a closer gap than what he had at even strength. So all this to say, Kuzmenko, like you said, 37 goals on an overall 26% shooting. And this is a guy who doesn't shoot a ton either, right? He's been averaging fewer than two shots per game on the season. So I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think, Elon, I'm kind of staying away at drafts next year with this bouncy deployment and this super high shooting percentage. To me, this is the kind of player in Kuzmenko that I would be happy to let someone else take. Of course, this is just his first year, right? And he's 27 years old. He turned 27 in February. So I think that means, like, the way I count it, I use the February 1st birthday because that's what Hockey Reference does. So the age as of February 1st. So this is age 26 season. We'll see if Kuzmenko shoots more in his age 27 season. It's possible, but I am not counting. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't even hit 30 goals next season, Kuzmenko. Mm. So yeah, I think I'll keep my distance.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. Like, he was, like, you know, not coming out of nowhere, right? Like, he had 53 points in 45 games in the KHL last season. And I think it's going to be a lot about deployment. Yeah, maybe he won't keep up the shooting percentage, but he'll be an interesting guy to try to peg for sure. Like, if he doesn't hit 30 goals, I still think he can easily be like a 60 guy. But the question is, like, can he hit 70? Can he hit like 80? Like,
yeah, there's just a lot in the air. Like, you need that shooting percentage to not regress as much as it looks like it should. You need his deployment to hold, and you need him to probably take a few more shots. Like, that's a lot of needs, and more than I'd want for a player. Like, assuming that he's going to be drafted as a 70-point player, yeah, I'll wait till I'm into the 60-point territory for Kuzmenko.
Yeah, I'm just interested even to see what his ADP will be, because I would be surprised if a lot of people are thinking this way, and maybe he will fall, but I guess we'll find out. You know, when we do our patron ranking, that's another fun thing the patrons do over the summer, which Andrea helped so much with last summer. And we'll get that going at some point where we'll start ranking players for Cupful next year. And it'll be fun to see where Kuzmenko slots in. Next up. Oh, but I didn't mention this. So the games, there was a tweet yesterday confirming that Pavel Francouz would start the game today in Anaheim. He's been injured for like so long. The Avs have been just rolling with mainly Georgiev, like every game. Every once in a while, Jonas Johansson, Anunin got in for a couple of games before he got blown up. But yeah, Francouz is playing today. You know, so it is a mid-game update, but Avalanche are up 1-0 against the Ducks. Francouz has 11 saves as of now. So I don't know. Seems like he's back and healthy. And obviously he's the backup going into the playoffs. I'm sure the Avs are happy to have him there and not just needing to bank on Georgiev being healthy or they're screwed, like it was a couple seasons ago when they lost, who was it, Kemper? Or, I don't even remember. Not, it wasn't Kemper. That was when they won. I guess it was Grubauer that got injured. Or maybe it was the goalie before that. I don't know. There was a year where they ended up having like Michael Hutchinson as their goalie, and obviously that did not work out well for them. But yes, they're obviously going to be happy to have their backup ready to go. I guess more goalie talk, Brian. Let's talk about Mackenzie Blackwood really quickly. He's actually another one of the unrestricted free agents going into the offseason. Like, there's a goalie that, like, how do you peg this person? He's never healthy. But he actually has been, like, okay lately, is it fair to say, since coming back from his injury. Yesterday, New Jersey played against Boston, and Blackwood had a great game. He stopped 38 of 40. Before that, actually, he like got pulled like early in a game versus Winnipeg. But anyways, I don't know how to read into this guy. Like, Vanacek's obviously
this is like every Blackwood conversation, right? It's like, well, on one hand, you know, he did well last game, but on the other hand, he hasn't done very well at all. But on the other hand, you know, like, and you can keep going back and see all the oscillations between good and bad games for Mackenzie Blackwood. But bottom line is, He hasn't proven himself to be able to play consistently well over like a long period of time. The upshot for Blackwood this season, though, is that according to how well he's playing above his expected number, this has been the best season of his career, playing nearly 4 save points above his expected number. The only season where he's played above his expected number aside from this one was his second season back in 1920, when he was 3 save points above his expected number, where we were first like, oh yeah, maybe this could work. And that followed his debut in 1819, where he played well, but also somewhat inconsistent in his first real sequence of NHL play. So where does this leave us with Mackenzie Blackwood? Someone I'm still not that interested in.
So honestly, if the Sens sign Blackwood, you won't be happy about that?
Oh, no. No, like, honestly, for me, and this isn't just an Ottawa thing, like, if you're a team that needs, like, they need that goaltending backbone. Like, they're missing it. They haven't had it for a while. I don't think now is the time to roll the dice and potentially waste another year like they just did with Talbot and Forsberg. And, like, Forsberg was injured, but I'm not sure he was up to the task anyway. It's tough. Blackwood is a bit, and this isn't just an Ottawa thing. This is like an every team thing. If you're competing, I don't think you want to waste a year of contention on potentially like wrecking it by taking on this super inconsistent guy.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And Vanecek has been really good lately again too. Remember, he had dipped for a bit, but over the last month, he's been fantastic. Almost a .930 save percentage at 5-on-5, which is real solid.
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch. Like, I think if I recall last year in the playoffs, like a lot of teams were like getting two goalies playing at some point, like throughout the run. I wouldn't be surprised if New Jersey, like I wouldn't be surprised if Blackwood gets a game or two at some point. Like Vanecek has a bad game and they try something else, but we'll see. Like New Jersey's an interesting team. They have so much firepower. Goaltending is a little bit of a question. Probably their best goalie is Akira Schmid, who's not going to be with them for the playoffs, or maybe, I don't know. I guess they don't do like taxi squad or whatever. But yeah, it'll be fun to see. I'd love to see New Jersey end up playing Boston at some point. They had that trade, right? We talked about Pavel Zacha before. It was Eric Halla for Zacha, 1-for-1. Wouldn't that be a fun, like, to see those two against each other and see who won that trade?
Fun. I've been just holding my breath, waiting to find out who won the Zacha for Halla trade.
I think that the Bruins won it. I'm going to call it. I'd rather have
Zacha. I think they've both done their job, but Zacha has probably has beaten the odds, like overperformed better, which is worth something.
Yeah. Andy corrected me. I said did Giuseppe wrong. I think I said did Giuseppe. It's just did Giuseppe. So.
No, I didn't Seppi. Did you?
How about some Jets line combos? We already talked about how the Jets shut out the Preds, and Connor Hellebuck was so good. Vladislav Namestnikov has continued to play in the top six, like even with people healthy. Like Nino Niederreiter, who was like, we were like going gaga over when he first came to Winnipeg. Nino's fallen to the bottom six. Namestnikov has been centering Wheeler and Ehlers, and Namestnikov has 4 points in his last four games. And like, Ehlers and Wheeler, like, I don't know, like, is it fair to say that Namestnikov has helped them break out of their slumps? Like, Wheeler was having one of his classic cold stretches this year. He's just gone hot and cold all year. Wheeler now has 5 points in his last four games. Ehlers was like so cold that people were like so frustrated, wondering if they should drop the guy. He's up to 6 points in his last four games. This line is working. So if the Jets make the playoffs, I'm assuming this is going to stick for a while.
Yeah, which gives Namestnikov some value. I honestly, Elon, like you're saying, like maybe Namestnikov got Wheeler and Ehlers going. I can't pretend to understand much about what Winnipeg has done this season and how it's happened. Like Connor, Dubois, Scheifele, I get. Everybody else, I don't. Morrissey too. Sorry, Morrissey, I get. Also Hellebuck, but anybody else, I don't know why Wheeler has been hot and cold and like who the real one is at this point. Same. I don't know why Ehlers has been, withheld opportunities also down the stretch too. And I don't know why he's suddenly found his game now versus before. I think there's been a lot of tumult in Winnipeg. Like we know openly, like Dubois and Scheifele to open the season, but also just lately over the last few months with how difficult, it's been to win for Winnipeg and for them to put together a solid few games. So thanks. This is my overall Winnipeg look. I don't know really what to say about Namestnikov and his role in getting Wheeler and Ehlers going, but I'm just happy to see anybody going in Winnipeg who has fallen off, like Wheeler and Ehlers specifically.
Also, now looking at some more interesting line combos. So Ovi wasn't in the lineup for the Caps yesterday against the Panthers. We already talked about how Alex Lyon once again, got a win for the Panthers. Washington apparently just doesn't win games when Ovechkin isn't in the lineup. So next time, there's a late announcement, I'm not like promoting gambling or something, but if it's like going to be a late announcement of whether Ovi's going to play or not, I don't know. I feel like there's something to be taken advantage of there where as soon as it's announced that he's not going to play, So Kuznetsov was on the third line with Milano and Craig Smith. like, Kuznetsov has fallen so far, eh? Like, Strome has taken over to play with Ovi when he is in the lineup, even with Ovi out of the lineup, like, super far down. Kuznetsov, like, did have an assist in that game, but only 58-point pace on the season, 55 points in 78 games. It's funny, he actually had a 58-point pace, like, two seasons ago before last season's breakout, so he's matching that disappointing season. So does this mean he's just following a pattern and he's going to go back to 81 next year? Like, he's, or, like, maybe next year is going to be, once again, this great opportunity to get Kuznetsov at amazing value. Because I thought he was good. Like, I just don't understand how this happens. Like, how a guy goes from, like, being a point-per-game player to, like, totally falling off like he has this year.
Yeah. Honestly, Elon, I can't say Kuznetsov has always been a tough guy. Like, I'm not sure I've ever really gotten Kuznetsov right. One thing that I definitely see differently between this year and last for Kuznetsov is defense. Like, he did no harm. Like, he wasn't great. Like, he wasn't anything special, but he did no harm. Like, Washington, his isolated impact is what I'm going here for here on hockeyviz.com. I really like the way that they isolate the impact of a player. I find it reasonably trustworthy. And his isolated impact showed this Kuznetsov that he had no impact, which is good. Like, no negative or positive impact on expected goals against while he was on the ice last year, which was a slight downgrade from the year before, but still way better than where he was a couple years ago. But this year, Kuznetsov is like Tony D'Angelo zone in terms of bleeding chances or contributing to the bleeding of chances against while he's on the ice. And I wonder if that's a reason why he's not getting a whole lot of opportunity offensively and he keeps getting buried just because he can't be trusted. He also has been, he's only been a net positive offensive player, according to this isolated impact, in one of the last four seasons. So maybe that's another reason to just not completely trust this guy over the course of his career. Like, he's never been a huge finisher. He had made a name for himself as a passer, but offense and defense are both cratering this season for Kuznetsov. So I'm not seeing a lot of sunlight here overall to think like, oh yeah, this is just an off season and next year I could hope he'll explode again. He'll explode again if he plays with Ovechkin, but Ovechkin's also another year older and it doesn't look like Kuznetsov's getting that opportunity right now.
Exactly.
So yeah, he's someone I would stay away from next year.
Not even, well, I guess he was top power play sometime, but he wasn't even like, top power play in this game today without Ovechkin on the lineup.
So when you what did you spend on him in the auction? $2? $4?
Yeah,
$6?
Ago, $2.
Yeah. Yeah. That was so great. Like, and that's where I'd be comfortable taking him next year. Like, maybe a good late draft flyer. But aside from that, I don't want to spend a whole lot of draft capital hoping that he does play with Ovechkin and that he succeeds there long enough to hold that job all season long.
Yeah. I guess, like, we'll see training camp. We'll see if he's, like... But, you know, even then, it's like, how long will it last? Like, he started this season with Ovechkin, and here we are. Brian, let's take our final commercial break. Of course, first, though, we got the Tier 1 winner, which we know is Ryan. We already talked to Ryan last week. Insane that he won the Fast Track last year in his first season Cupful, got to Tier 1, won the whole thing. So that one's out of the way. Ryan is incredible. Who are our Tier 2 and Tier 3 winners for the Cupful this year?
All right, over in Tier 3, Mika in my division. He stoots, he scores, is the Tier 3 champion heading to Tier 1. Also heading to Tier 1, the Rat City Rollers from Boras, managed by Chris. And our final Tier 3 champion, also heading to Tier 1, are the Bell City Beauties, managed by Nolan M. So congrats to all of you. You will be joining our Tier 2 champions in Tier 1 next year, including longtime listener and, like, maybe Mr. Congeniality of all of the Keeping Carlson community, PJ, and his team Medal of Connor, heading up to Tier 1 for the Ultimate Challenge, and Besser's Beauticians, won it all in San Jose, managed by Nimmer. I think Nimmer's over in Sweden, too. I've played against a lot of these guys over the course of the last few years, you know? Like, there's a lot of movement, and it's great. You get to know so many managers in the Cupful, and it's going to be, like, stiff competition for our Tier 1 champion in Sweden, Ryan, to defend his Cupful Ultimate Championship next year against a really, really strong field who don't have a lot less experience in Tier 1 than him. And he just showed that you can win Tier 1 without having played in Tier 1 before. So it's going to be a really fun year to watch. I feel like I like I recognize and know, like we have established people in the couple fighting for the title of the best fantasy hockey manager in the world. And it'll be a lot of fun to watch. Ryan has his work cut out for him, but congrats, Ryan, again, for your ultimate championship. And Elon couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. No couple ultimate champion has ever repeated, like let alone back to, like let alone at all, but you've got to go back to back. We'll see if you could be the first.
Yeah, I thought I was going to repeat winning the playoff pool, and I couldn't do that. We'll see if Anthony does that. That's our other big champion that's putting his title on the line. And once again, not too late to sign up for the Keeping Carlson playoff pool. We're going to set the deadline at Friday to register. But Brian, with that, let's take a break. We'll come back to finish off this episode that's been such a blast. I love chatting with you. We haven't chatted all week. And here we are talking hockey with our buds, you know, not stressed out about our leagues. Just chatting. All right.
It was a great Lewis accent there for a moment.
All right. So we'll be back soon. You're listening to Keeping Carlson. Welcome back to the final part, the third period of part two of this mega episode of Keeping Carlson, the season finale. So, Brian, we're just still going to go through these news and notes because there's a lot of interesting things that have been happening. That's the thing. You could just like go to game2tweets.com and get lost. Get lost in the tweets. That's what I do all the time. It's such a fun site.
These, if you're going to get lost in any tweets, get lost in these.
Well, exactly.
Like, don't get lost in the other tweets.
When people tell me, like, oh, Twitter's garbage. Like, you waste your life on... It's like, my Twitter's great. Like, I follow all the beat writers, and I see all the fun NHL news. Like, I'm not seeing any of this toxic stuff. So it's fun.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's gotten harder to be on, but yeah, if you just stick to GameDayTweets.com, you wouldn't even know it. It's amazing.
So anyway, not to make this a commercial for Game Day Tweets, but the Islanders' lines were interesting. So the Islanders, again, just like Florida, are like fighting for their lives to get into the playoffs. It's looking maybe good. Like they've been doing really well. Bo Horvat has gotten hot again. You know, we talked about how he really cooled off after Barzal got injured. You know, 4 points in these last three games. Horvat has been on a line with Anders Lee and someone named Simon Holmstrom, who has 3 points in his last two games. Simon Holmstrom, Brian, got to give you one of my classic. Who the heck is Simon Holmstrom? Actually, this is like rude of me. I should know. This is actually exposing me as being dumb because I'm seeing he's actually a first round pick from just a couple of years ago. So maybe I should have known this guy. But yeah, he's getting good deployment.
I also don't know Simon Holmstrom. I am surprised to hear that he was a first round pick. Holmstrom was drafted 23rd overall, so a late first round pick back in 2019 by the Isles. I am checking. His father is not Tomas Holmstrom. So he doesn't have that relation. His father is Jonas Holmstrom, who I'm not familiar with. But yeah, okay. Holmstrom, this is his fourth pro season. And he hasn't been like anything special in the AHL. Like, I guess he had 43 points in 68 games in his second or third, depending on how you want to count, like full seasons or part seasons in North America. This year, I'm not sure, Elon, exactly what to expect from this guy. Usually, someone drafted 23rd overall in the first round, like, yes, first round pick, but also late, like, anyone past 15th overall is generally, like, similar to a second round pick, honestly. So he's someone that I'm not terribly sure that I'm super interested in, but I would be, because he's playing with Horvat and Anders Lee. Also, Anders Lee, real rough time for him. Like, if anyone is holding on to Anders Lee, he has just 3 points in his last 13 games. And it's a wonder that the Isles continue to contend for the playoffs when the guy who should be, I mean, prior to the Bo Horvat acquisition, their top goal scorer has just gone so cold. Lee is on pace for his second consecutive 50-point season, which is basically, like, barely fantasy relevant, right? Like, he's somebody that you might have at the bottom of your roster and frequently wonder, like, oh, should I stream him out? And that sort of player can be frustrating. But this is basically the fourth time in the last five seasons that Anders Lee has been a 50-point player. And the only time he wasn't, he only played 27 games. So I don't even know that you can go by that. I'm not going to go by it. Four seasons in a row now, Anders Lee, 50-point player, which I think is just a takeaway that we shouldn't be that interested in him going forward, regardless of his deployment, because he's had good deployment for many of these years, including top power play. It's actually crazy how little, like, his like his one big season when he was 60-point player, 22 power play points. Outside of that, never more than 16. And that's like a high. Like he hasn't even really come close to 16. He's been off by 3 or 4 points ever since then.
Yeah, I mean, I know now it's like I'm going to fall into the trap, right? Like if he's on a line with Barzal and Horvat, and he's the third person on that line, that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't see why he would be. Like, I feel like Lee and Horvat should be on different...
Well, they're online together lately.
Well, that's because Barzal... I'm wondering if that's because Barzal is out. But yeah, no, I wonder. We'll lots of wonders, yeah.
He'll be another guy like Kuznetsov next year. Like, don't reach for Anders Lee, but could be a fun late pick just because it's going to be a new dynamic with like two stars on the team now. The Ducks tweeted Stromer when Ryan Strome scored a goal in his 700th NHL game. And he had a goal and an assist. Unfortunately, those good games were few and far between. We haven't talked about Ryan Strome very much this season. We used to talk about him a lot. He was pretty solid on the Rangers, like always rostered in Kakupfel in all of my divisions while he was there. But this year he quickly, like I think he got drafted in a lot of Kakupfel divisions and was quickly dropped. And yeah, he's at 40 points now in 80 games. So Ryan Strome definitely showing that he was a product of, you know, his line mates quite a bit, specifically Panarin. Maybe at some point Anaheim will like give him some guys to play with, but he was like playing with some pretty good players this year. Like he had a lot of time with Zegras, like Troy Terry. So yeah, Ryan Strome. Stromer. I don't know. Congrats on 700 games.
Yeah. Yeah. Way to get there. Remember, like he started his career with the Isles, right? Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was a whole drama. Like people were like mad that they weren't playing him or something. Like he was a high pedigree guy, fifth overall pick.
But then they did, and like he still didn't do much. And I don't know about you, Elon. I've completely forgotten about the 100 games that he spent as an Oiler. I don't know how he ended up there at age 24. And then
they made like a bad trade. I think the Oilers like gave him away to the Rangers for someone terrible, and then Strome was doing really good, and the guy who the Oilers got was like some loser that like barely played.
Yeah, we need to find the Ryan Strome tree or history. But yeah, like this is a guy who's never done anything unless he's been with a pair of elite line mates. And even then, like his last year with the Rangers wasn't even that great. And there were times this season where I wanted to add Strome, and I was actually kind of mad that I didn't add Ryan Strome. And then I wasn't because he did absolutely nothing. Because it's not for lack of opportunity. Like his most common line mate this season has been Trevor Zegras, and then next has been Vetrano, and then next has been Troy Terry. So he's generally been playing with like one top line caliber player and has not been able to translate that into anything. In fact, like we've talked a lot about the Ducks' defensive struggles. I think a lot of them can be attributed to Ryan Strome. His isolated impact shows that the Ducks are 20%, giving up 20% more expected goals against per 60 minutes when Strome is on the ice. Like it's like a bloody red picture, which is not good. You want blue on these charts at hockeyviz.com. So yeah, terrible defensively, non-factor offensively. I don't know where Ryan Strome's career goes from here. Elon, have you found the trade tree?
It's actually like really bad for Edmonton, like both who they trade. Oh man. Okay. So first of all, to acquire Ryan Strome from the Islanders, they gave Jordan Eberle 1-for-1.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
So that was a loss because Ryan Strome came to the Oilers and stunk. Then they traded Strome to the Rangers for Ryan Spooner.
Yes. This was like it was a reverse red paperclip.
So like basically then Ryan Strome became good again on the Rangers. At least he was putting up good numbers. So basically they traded Eberle for Spooner. Basically Eberle and Strome looked good and the Oilers ended up with Spooner somehow out of all of this. So,
but then the Oilers traded Ryan Spooner for Sam Gagne.
Oh, and then did they who did they trade Gagne for?
I feel like Gagne's contract just ran out. I don't see any Gagne trades, although I'm not on Gagne's Wikipedia page. So,
although you talk about how the Ducks let in a lot of goals and stuff,
he was traded. He was traded Gagne to the Red Wings.
Mm-hmm.
With second round picks in 2020 and 2021 for Andreas Athanasiou Ryan Kuffner.
And Andreas Athanasiou, they ended up like benching and then like not re-signing, right? So they basically gave away those picks for nothing.
Yeah, he was not.
Oh my god!
You know who those... was not given a qualifying offer? Who were those picks?
They were turned out to be good.
Oh no,
Atu Rati, who I know was a big part in a trade recently. Like, I know he's still a high pedigree guy. And then the guy we already just talked about, Brock Faber, the defensive player of the year.
Wow. This is this is it. Like, this is the story of the Edmonton Oilers over the last Wow.
They should have just held Eberle just so that they could have also held these picks.
Or just held on to Gagne. Like, they sent 2 second rounders along with them. They'd almost escaped the Jordan Eberle trade tree. And they're like, oh, we're gonna throw some more chips into the pot. Wow. Okay. Well, that was fun.
Okay.
That was fun.
By the way, you talked you talked about how Ryan Strome was like against like a lot of goals while he was on the ice or shots. There was a tweet from Craig Morgan that the Ducks broke the NHL record this year for most shots on goal allowed in a single season.
Wow, and they've been pretty good at doing that the last couple of years too. Huh. Good for congrats. Congrats to Anaheim.
All right, let's end on some high notes here. Buffalo tweeted, so Rasmus Dahlin had himself a game yesterday. Had a goal, 2 assists, 4 blocks. Dahlin's going to end the season. Like, it's too bad. Like, Erik Karlsson is having this, like, insane year, which is going to overshadow, like, what Dahlin did. But, like, going into next season, out of curiosity, Brian, like, let's say, you know, one-year league, I'm not thinking long-term, who would you take first between Erik Karlsson and Rasmus Dahlin?
Ooh, good question. I mean, like, Dahlin is still on an 80-point pace. Karlsson is on a team that will be, you know, minus Timo Meier full season, although it's not necessarily slowed Karlsson down, and we've talked about some prospects coming up in San Jose. Whew. You know, and it's hard, too, because the knock on Karlsson, the reason that I embarrassingly did not draft him this year when he was right there and I was so close, I took John Klingberg instead. Like, I need to be upfront about that. Is like injuries, right? So I don't know if Karlsson's injury passes behind him, and I will take the potential 10-point downgrade, I guess, to take Dahlin, who has not missed a lot of time in the last couple seasons and found a new gear to his game. He's shot 7.5% for the last 2 seasons, and I'm feeling like that could actually hold. Like, this is Dahlin. So that's like another consideration. But of course, Karlsson has some places where he could regress too. It's a great question. Elon, I think I'm just going to take the younger player who's missed less time to injury, and I'll take Dahlin. How about you?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard to argue with that answer. Like, I think we're seeing that Karlsson still has this like insane upside, 100-point upside, apparently. Dahlin could also. But yeah, I'd probably take Dahlin, but like, definitely not going to get mad at anyone who says the answer should be Karlsson.
Yeah, like I'm going to take Dahlin, but I would not at all rule out Karlsson outpointing him.
Yeah. Speaking of the Sharks, though, they have a new acquisition who's looked really good. Jacob Peterson came over from Dallas, and Peterson has 6 points. In his last 6 games, like six, just a point every single game, just like clockwork. And he's been playing on a line with Tomáš Hertl. He was also on the top power play with Hertl in this last game. So versus Edmonton. So like, I don't know, he's like maybe the new Barabanov. I said that on Matchup Maximizer yesterday. I was like, remember Barabanov was a nobody, came over from the Leafs, was getting good deployment, and all of a sudden turned into like a 50, 60 point guy, a guy that we recommended on the podcast a bunch. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't talk too highly about Barabanov, but he was like very fantasy relevant for a good stretch anyway. And now Jacob Peterson is there. And why not? Why can't Jacob Peterson be at least what Barabanov was? So obviously we'll have to wait and see. Like, we'll see next year, like what the lines are. And obviously Eklund will be there. Like, there'll potentially be more people to compete. But nice breath of air into Peterson's career here after he like couldn't make the team in Dallas this year.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the underlying numbers and seeing if I see anything really different about what Jacob Peterson is doing as a Shark. It looks to me like he's shooting less, but seeing 2.5 more minutes at 5-on-5 per night. Plus, these last several games on the top power play unit, like this is the first meaningful power play time he's ever seen in his career. Jacob Peterson, for anyone who doesn't know, 20, including Elon, you and I, 23 years old. He was drafted back in 2017 in the 5th round, so 132nd overall. Like, this is a bit of a deep cut. Barabanov is somebody with a little more pedigree than Jacob Peterson. I expect him to, like, if these two are contending for a role next year, I assume Barabanov will get it. But maybe down the stretch, Elon, yeah, you can't look away from Jacob Peterson on a 6-game point streak, seeing top power play deployment for the first time in his career. Even though nothing new really seems to be happening at 5-on-5, the power play stuff is good enough for me to be interested.
Yeah, and like just for next week, you know, like if you need a streamer, Peterson's playing on the top line and top power play. So that's what you want to get in a streamer, ideally, along with, you know, a good schedule. All right, Brian, let's end with a couple like non-Jacob Petersons. How about let's have two historic generational players. We had a tweet from the Penguins PR how Sidney Crosby had his 1,500th career point in his 1,188th career game. Crosby became the sixth fastest player in NHL history to reach 1,500 career points. The only players who did it faster than him, Esposito, Jágr, Marcel Dion, Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky. So, among greatness, Crosby, very good.
Yeah, and none of those guys you named played like, in the same era, right? Like, so I'm sure someone somewhere has done some kind of era-adjusted analysis, and I'd love to see how he compares against Gretzky, Lemieux, Dion, Jágr, and Esposito. Pretty amazing stuff. Like, and he's like still doing it. At what point do we start to think that Crosby can't do it anymore? I don't know. Like, I'm not ruling out that Sidney Crosby has another season next year where he paces for 90 points. It'll be his age 36 season, but I'm not seeing any clear signs of him slowing down.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of having like not a career year, but he's having like amongst his like great career years, you know, like he's just like keeping it up. Like there's no reason to think he's gonna slow down, like you said, like next year, following year, we'll see.
I was just gonna say, touch wood, he has played every game this season.
Very
and
cool.
that's the first time since 17-18. Since then he's had a lot of or 18-19 he almost did it, but the last few years have not been kind to Crosby and his health. So this is great. Again, touch wood.
And then speaking of players joining Lemieux and Gretzky and co in like just, you know, NHL history, McDavid with his 150 points, only the sixth player in history to do that, joins Bernie Nichols, who we once were offered to have him on the podcast. Bernie Nichols, Phil Esposito, Steve Yzerman, Mario Lemieux, and Wayne Gretzky. So amazing for Connor McDavid.
McDavid has two more games still. So, like, he could get to 160. Like, 9 points over two games for McDavid, not ruling it out. 340 shots for him so far, which is a career high. I don't know if any of that is crazier than the fact that in the season that followed the pandemic, in 56 games, McDavid was on pace for 154 points. So, he has actually done this before. This guy is a monster, and I like, for our sake, for everyone's sake, I hope the Oilers goaltending holds up and we get to see how he performs in a super high stakes playoff run.
Yeah, it's gonna be so fun to watch. I already called it there. He's my Conn Smythe prediction right now, Connor McDavid. All right, so Brian, with that, we've made it through a really fun episode and a really fun season of Keeping Carlson. Hope everyone's enjoyed this show and all the shows we've been doing over this past NHL season. And like I said before, we still have a lot to go. We're going to do another show next week. Then we're going to continue from there. We're going to talk playoffs. We're going to do interviews. We're going to do, you know, looking back on the season. Have a lot of fun while we're at it. So hopefully you'll stay subscribed, listening to Keeping Carlson all throughout the summer. Our numbers always like go down a lot. And I feel like they shouldn't, because I think they're good episodes. But anyway, yeah, you people listening, you're the real friends of the show here. Thanks a lot. Hope you liked it. Let's cue the outro music. Brian, why don't you go ahead and read us the credits?
All right. This episode of the Keeping Carlson Fantasy Hockey Podcast was presented by Dauber Hockey and powered by our patrons, including our super supporters, Ricard, Rob, David, Derek, Tom, Andrea, Ivan, Aaron, and Adam. Oh, yeah. And of course, Patty. And you're all super supporters. If you are supporting us at this time of year, we really, really appreciate it. Like, it's a little, like Elon said, our numbers go down and we're still working hard to put up, it's a nice little pat on the back or encouragement for us. So thank you to anybody supporting us for just $1 a month over at keepingcarlson.com/patron. Thank you to one final, I think I said this last week, but thanks again. Like, Kevin Hebert, our couple coordinator, we've already had a phone call We're planning big things for next year in the Kickupful. So stay tuned for that. We'll let you all know when registration opens, though patrons will know first. So if you want to, there's another reason. KKUPFL.com if you have any concerns or questions, or not concerns, if you have questions about how the league runs. Congrats to our 43 champions again. Elon, thanks you and Shams for all the fancy news coming on at GameDayTweets.com. Logo art by BrandonWeeb.com. Outro music by Pat Roach. This episode was researched with help from Dauber Hockey, Frozen Tools, Dauber Prospects, Natural Stat Trick, Evolving Hockey, Cap Friendly, The Athletic, HockeyAlerts.org, Hockey Reference, Hockey Biz, Hockey Database, Elite Prospects, and Yahoo.
Great job as always, Brian. To end the show, though, guess who has an assist today for the Ducks?
Stromer!
Stromer! Doing it again.
Wow.
Rejuvenating his career. But okay, great job, Brian. That was so much fun. And while we... I guess there's not going to be any short shifts this week, so you're going to have to wait all the way till our mega show next Sunday. There's not going to be a matchup maximizer either. So while you're waiting, suffering through so many days without an episode on our Keeping Carlson feed, what can people do to pass the time?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you're passing the time. I mean, if you have free time, you could, like, outwardly advocate. But just in general, if you could carry yourself in a way that makes it so that you do all, you're doing all you can to make sure that fantasy hockey is for everyone. We and everyone would appreciate it. Thanks.